Welcome to Edo Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on the weekly, Green Knight RPG, NBC Universal getting into comics, Cutie Marks and Dragons, D&D Adventure Begins. All right. So how's it going?
Yeah, all right. Nobody saw my massive grimace when you came up with that Cutie Marks and Dragons thing. All right.
Okay, let's get right to it then.
All right. So jumping ahead.
So we were talking about D&D is owned by Hasbro. The parent company of WotC is Hasbro. They're probably constantly looking for synergy between products. And
synergy or just crossovers?
Crossover. Yeah, okay, I guess okay. This is a crossover collaboration. So earlier this month, Hasbro launched their My Little Pony crossover collection, which mashes up My Little Pony characters with other popular fandoms. So they've already done Ghostbusters, and next on the list is D&D. So they're going to do a set of five D&D figures, typical kind of 4.5-inch plastic characters, and there's going to be a rogue, a barbarian, a druid, a bard, and a wizard. And they each come with exclusive D20s.
With a cutie mark for the 20, probably.
Probably, that are pony themed. Right, so they're going to have cutie marks that correspond to their character classes. And I was trying to think, who is this for? Because
nerds. Yeah, nerds and collectors.
Yeah, it's going to be brony D&D collectors, and I think they're going to be off the shelves before any little kid ever, you know, says, I like ponies. Oh, what's this pony? Oh, what's D&D? Like, it may never
Well, I don't have a degree in marketing or anything, but do you think Hasbro is assuming that will happen?
Well, I think they're looking for, it seems like, and there's another thing we'll talk about this week. They're constantly looking for like ways in, you know, they want the gateway to the hobby. And so they're trying to, in different media or in different versions or different forms, trying to give people a taste of what Dungeons and Dragons is or could be. Keep that in their mind. Just like, you know, Saturday morning cartoons of Marvel characters and things, you know, kept people thinking, oh, I know who Spider-Man is. Oh, look, he's got a book.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. But it's funny. It seems a little clumsy, and it doesn't seem like it will ever get into the hands of kids.
Well, so, that's what I was saying. Yeah.
It's just going to reinforce a weird crossover nerd culture.
Yeah, which, mashups are fun. Not everything has to have a mashup. That's my feeling. Like, lots of times when I see these mashups, I'm like, those things were fine on their own. It's not like you're going to hit on the next Reese's peanut butter cup, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, no, I saw those as well. Didn't really realize it was a crossover, but should have put it together. And yeah, I have to wonder whether Hasbro is kind of marketing these at people who are already going to collect D&D products or people who are already going to collect My Little Pony products.
Right.
And sort of the splash over into any new people is just going to be luck or a secondary consideration.
Yeah, and there's already been My Little Pony RPGs released.
So, yeah, there was.
Yeah, right.
And there's also, I couldn't tell you who made it, but there's also Pony Finder, like a supplemental book to play pony characters in Pathfinder. Who would want to do that with all the math? I don't know. There was also, and again, I'm going to forget the creator. I think there was a game called Roan, which was pony characters in possibly some kind of like World War One, World War Two, alternate universe fighter stuff that I know about because it was powered by Ubiquity. The same thing for same system for Hollow Earth Expedition a couple of the games that I like. And I was tempted to at least look at it, but then ultimately decided not to.
Well, I think we have our answer right here. I just got to the recommended or the manufacturer's suggested retail price.
Okay.
$59.99.
For the set of five?
Yes.
Okay. That is not that's not ridiculous for a set of five.
Right.
It's kind of, actually, you know what? I don't know what the average toy price is for kids now.
Yeah,
because
they're getting
I don't
up there.
Mind.
Yeah, right.
But that definitely puts it out of, I think, out of the range of like the casual buyer. Like the kid's gonna walk to a toy shop, say, oh, I want that.
Well, we'll buy it for you, but you can never open it.
Yeah. Oh, see, that's the nerd parents. Kind of the regular parents, the non-nerd parents are going to look at it and go, $60 for five ponies. Yeah, I don't think so.
Right.
Of course, who knows how much a five-pack of regular ponies is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're $10 a piece. So I think these are kind of special. Yeah, special.
You say that now. I'm going to have a look at Toys R Us this weekend and come back to you on that.
So speaking of gateway to the hobby, another thing, and this is an odd thing, and they keep doing this. Like, there are so many versions of this, and so I'm curious what they think is unique about this. So Dungeons & Dragons, Adventure Begins, cooperative board game.
Okay.
So in, I believe, October, so this year, depending on, you know, everything, all factors, they're going to be releasing a very introductory D&D board game. It's going to have I believe there are four plastic miniatures, mm-hmm. human, elf, a dragonborn, and a dwarf, and each like with a corresponding class. So they have a little dashboard, and they each come with a color matching D20.
Okay.
But basically, you're not tile. It's very odd. There are only like maybe four tiles in mm-hmm. the game, and they seem like they represent areas.
Okay.
And it's more very, very stripped down and more kind of card-based. So they already have, I mean, Dungeon exists, and that was created at the same time that Dungeons & Dragons existed. And so TSR still owns that. Mm-hmm. And that is a great introductory to dungeon crawling, like getting the, I get the idea. I see what we're doing here. They keep trying to come up with a board game that kind of is a half step to D&D. Mm-hmm. This is a very kind of introductory feeling step, like just very basically introducing there is different folk in this world. They are adventuring in these areas. Yeah, right, right. And each of them has a different, you know, corresponding primary color that matches their die. But it seems a little simplistic. And there's already been, I mean, if you just look on Kickstarter, every month there's a tile crawling kind of HeroQuest clone.
But are they put out by Hasbro?
That's true. That's true. I'm not sure exactly what this is meant to fill. It's a much smaller box. Like it doesn't have, so they've done for 4E, yep. and I think converted to 5E, a bunch of the kind of major settings with mechanics like cards and tiles and things that basically you're using the mechanics of either 4E or 5E in these kind of famous settings, yep. like Strahd or the some of the newer Tomb of Annihilation. I think there's a set of 4.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. There's a bunch
of. I know when 4th edition came out, and I think Lyle got one or two of them. I don't remember playing them. I think he got like Wrath of Ashardlon and, mm-hmm. and the Castle Ravenloft
yes,
one.
Yes, right, right, right.
And according to him, those games were really good because 4E wanted a grid,
mm-hmm,
kind of
mm-hmm.
had these defined powers, and you had to change very little from the 4E rule right. set to these board games.
Yeah, yeah.
And they worked really well. 5th edition lacks mm-hmm. some of the elements that I think 4E mm-hmm. had that mm-hmm. made it easily translatable to a board game.
Right.
So I don't know what they've done for 5E, but I do see a kind of a need or an entry point mm-hmm. for a really stripped down version that kids could play.
Right.
Or you know, parents who don't know anything about the hobby could play with their kids, because that's probably where you want to get them. So they do come out with a lot of them, or there seem to be a lot that exist, but I don't necessarily think it's bad from a business standpoint for them to do this.
Yeah, and this does seem to, because this is ages 10 and up, and okay. usually it's a little bit higher when you're doing actual, you know, RPG-style
right,
combat and stuff.
12, 13, something
right.
like that.
Yeah. So they usually age it up a little bit. So maybe this is going to be toned down a little bit, and you defeated them, or you beat them. You know, it's not going to be you slayed them.
You know what? You say that. I don't think they're going to do that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to buy it and find out, but I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious. So they're talking about, so it's cooperative gameplay, quick gameplay, and choose a journey for your path. So there's like different areas. You
okay.
can choose different areas. And they're basically just these small tiles that link together that just have like eight spots on them where
okay.
your character. So I'm not quite sure exactly. It's very minimal. What's in the box is very minimal. And I guess, you know, they're saying quick entry to Dungeons and Dragons. Mm. So that's what they're trying to do. And you know, there's no dungeon master. So, you know,
oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
two
so
people
it's just,
play.
It's
yeah.
kind of, oh, two people play against the board. Oh,
yeah.
I thought it would
yeah.
be up to like four or something like that.
Well, 2 to 4.
Okay.
But but they're saying, you know, somebody doesn't have to run the thing. So yeah, I guess everybody can be their own dungeon master.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So I'm curious because there is so many and they produce so many, but I guess they're finding that they do need to keep scaling it down to actually find a sweet spot that a kid will want to, you know, have his parents play with him.
You know, speaking of someone who my entry point to role playing games was HeroQuest,
mm-hmm.
the right. old Milton Bradley Games Workshop
right.
Combination. It was actually Advanced HeroQuest was the first role playing game I played at the Games Workshop store.
Ooh.
You know, one Saturday my dad took me down there after I figured out what it was, and then got I think the HeroQuest board game. Shortly after that, I guess the first one, not Advanced. And that was a pretty decent game. And you had a bunch of like expansions. And even though there is no role-playing mechanics whatsoever in it, it is, and board games like that are a decent, I think, entry point to the role-playing game hobby because a lot of the mechanics are there.
Right.
And you are welcome to act as your character,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to something like Monopoly, where you're like, great, now I'm going to roleplay a shoe, buying property.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. That's true. Yeah, what were you saying? There was a Fantasy Flight game that you guys were taking a break from D&D or something and played that game. And it's like it's a tile crawling with monsters.
I think it was Descent.
I think that was
first edition Descent that I got second hand from someone. He had a whole bunch of expansions. And that was pretty involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had to track like wounds and stamina and all this other stuff. But it was a lot of fun. And we actually did more role playing in that than we did during a lot of our 4E games, my feeling was. I think because it was completely hands off for role playing. So kind of encouraged us to add role-playing to it.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. And sometimes that's maybe more fun when you're not so strictly, like, you know, you're not resolving something in the game mechanically, you're just kind of adding flavor.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what we were. Yeah, right. We were adding flavor to the mechanics that were happening in the game. Yeah.
So that's out this year, and it's yet another wade into the hobby. Many doors all lead to the same room. Speaking of companies that are doing something they shouldn't be doing.
NBC
Universal is getting into comics.
Like the TV company.
Yes. Okay. Right. So Universal Content Productions, they're launching a division called UCP Graphic. And so the first project, so they're not going to go lightly into this. There's no amateur route. They're paying probably big bucks to Grant Morrison to write their first, Proctor Valley Road is their first series that they are paying him to write.
Is that something I should know?
I don't think so. I think it's original. It's an original. Yeah, so it tells the story of a group of teenage girls suspected in the disappearance of several teen boys in 1964 California beach town. So maybe if it's based on actual events.
I don't know.
Yeah, so this is, I mean, the comics industry is in incredible disarray right now. So it's like,
But isn't that potentially a good time to enter?
Yeah, that's true.
Possibly.
Yeah, if you think you can throw money at something, but I don't. Yeah, and you'll be right in there with everybody else that's losing money, but I don't know. So he signed a multi-year TV deal back in so Morrison signed the TV deal back in 2018. So through that, they produced Happy, the Sci-Fi Channel series.
Yeah.
I think that's on Netflix as
I've seen that. Yeah, on Netflix.
He's also co-written the Brave New World adaption that is going to be on Peacock, which is also NBC.
Oh, another streaming service.
Yeah. There's just not enough of them.
Yeah.
I think that's where The Office is going. I think everybody loses The Office, American Office, and it goes to Peacock. And it's like, oh, great, I'm going to pay $10 a month to watch The Office again. So I guess this is, they're now rolling this into actually producing comics. And they didn't specify whether they're publishing or they're just going to try to, because they say publish. Yeah, they say to publish, but
that means that could mean electronically as well. Right. Yeah.
If things are moving in that direction, we'll have to see how local comic book stores recover, because the direct sales market is comics now. You don't find comics because there's not even really booksellers. There's Barnes and Noble left, and so there's not a way to sell comics anymore. So it's a interesting move, and I'm curious why they think this is a good idea.
Possibly because everything's in disarray, as you said.
Yeah, right. Now's our chance.
Yeah.
Quick. Let's start a comic studio. Yeah, but they're going in with some big guns. And so maybe since they already had Grant Morrison under contract for writing TV, they're like, hey, we could do comics, right? You did comics or something like that, right?
I'm sure that they're completely different. But I wonder what writing for comics compared to writing for TV is like.
I don't know. I think you have to, you're thinking about the page as opposed to the scene. Mm. But, but most comic writers write in screenplay format.
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering. There's going to be a difference between like writing for the page, but from running my role-playing games a lot more like a TV or a movie, including like GM directions, like, okay, we get a shot of, or the camera zooms in on, or we're going to cut over here to try and get the players to kind of imagine in their head what we would see on screen. Mm-hmm. That made me wonder if writing for a comic book, including like the panels, are treated kind of like a little screen potentially, where you could say, okay, from writing for TV, you kind of describe what the scene would look like, what would be on screen, and you could maybe do the same thing for comic books.
I think so. Yeah, and I think it varies from writer to writer, because writers like trust the artist to kind of interpret. Mm. Yeah, because there was some artist that I was just, I'm not going to be able to say his name. Yeah. Bill Sienkiewicz. The guy that he did New Mutants in the 80s. And so his interpretations of scripts, and I forget, I think it was Elektra.
Okay.
I think it was Elektra Assassin that Frank Miller wrote, and then he illustrated, and then Frank Miller rewrote it to fit his art.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because it was painted. Mm. It was at that age of kind of painted panels, the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, so his work was so inspiring that it actually changed the writer, which is... Rarely ever happens.
Well, I've also seen I guess not memes, but kind of like contest, like for fun contest, mm-hmm. just in the edges of my social media, where it's different comic illustrators or colorists or inkers. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of pictures kind of lined up together where it's like, here's the same page inked by a whole bunch of different people.
Ah,
and mm-hmm. you can see the difference, or colored by a whole bunch of different people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure there are ones that were kind of like, okay, here's what the writers turned in.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a bunch of different pages by different artists or pencilers to show you the difference. Mm-hmm. And I think the one I saw most recently was inkers and digital colorists to kind of show you these people are important as well, because look at the difference you're going to get between different people. Yeah.
No, yeah, that's true. We'll have to see if those books get any attention or where you can even find them. You know, so we'll find out if they're going to, because they're going to either jump on board with Diamond they're going to do some direct, if what they're seeing, because DC is Warner Brothers Viacom, I think.
Okay.
So this might be so they're going to look for independent distribution. So we can do that as well. And I don't know. Wow. We'll see. Another thing that could only happen during these end times.
We're officially going with that now, are we? Okay.
I don't know. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel.
It must be there. Don't make me do a the Lord of the Rings Sam Gamgee quote.
Right.
I couldn't. Sorry, go ahead.
But as everybody's noticed, a lot of the big summer Hollywood films are kind of indefinitely delayed. So there's no release dates for a lot of big projects that were going to come out in the summer and then, maybe in the fall and maybe never. So a lot of indefinite delays. So one of those movies is David Lowry's The Green Knight.
Okay.
Based on Gawain and the Green Knight, the Arthurian legend. And if you've seen the trailer for this, I'll put a link to it because it's visually very compelling. It's gorgeous. I mean, I've not seen real satisfying King Arthur films. I mean, they just haven't. Because didn't Guy Ritchie just do a King Arthur? A King Arthur heist film. It was just
all I know is there's some Netflix thing where it's going to be about The Lady of the Lake,
right? Something like that. Yeah, the 13 Reasons Why Suicide Girl is going to be that's wonderful. Yeah, so there isn't great satisfying King Arthur lore on film, but this looks really amazing. But it's indefinitely delayed. So originally to be released May 29th. So we don't know when the film comes out, but something that was produced that will come out that was probably going to be in support of this is an RPG.
Okay, cool.
So The Green Knight, A Quest for Honor, takes place in the world of the film, and players can take on the role of a knight, a noble, a hunter, a sorcerer, or a bard, and they'll face a series of obstacles and tests of their honor. In typical tabletop campaigns, players can utilize several strategies on their journey, engaging in battles or trying to talk their way through situations. So this game accommodates 4 to 6 players, and this was an odd detail. It boasts a professional game master, Tim Woods, who has a PhD in English, specializing in RPG studies, has kind of given his blessing of the system. I have never heard of Tim Woods.
ditto? Or but, who knows? Maybe I've seen games.
But an interesting detail about Tim Woods is this PhD runs anywhere from 7 to 12 different RPG sessions in a given week. For a wide range of players.
The PhD?
That's his profession. He's a professional GM, I guess.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
So that's why I guess he has got credibility, because he has a ton of experience and he studied it wherever you study RPGs.
I don't know. I'd like to find out where you do that, because I want a PhD in game mastery too.
But I thought it's interesting. So it'll be available on their website for $35. So probably a pretty basic set. They didn't detail. I guess the game will include a game master's guide, a map, 5 character sheets, and a 20-sided die. So not a huge expansive system, because they're going after something very specific.
Right, right.
And I think that's interesting, because that's a thing that I think was part of original thinking of fantasy role playing that kind of fell away. You have this more recent, murder hobo thing. There's not a lot of honor. There's not a lot of quests or chivalry or anything. So that's kind of disappeared. And, if you're playing a paladin, if you're playing some character that has, an affiliation to a church and has some loyalties to a kingdom, then, those sorts of things should come into play. But I haven't played a session in a long time that's even come up.
I wonder if that's because, and just spitballing here, if we've not moved to, but like the party system, because you have to make a character that's going to get along with all the other characters, unless the party is going to break,
right.
And then players make new characters. So that means, like, if you have, like, the typical rogue or the murder hobo-y style characters, mm-hmm. anyone with honor is either going to have to play a lot of, well, I didn't see that. Yeah. Well, I didn't see that. Or I'm going to be in a different part the city from you torturing this poor NPC. Or be okay with it, which kind of goes away from from honor. So it kind of seems like an everybody or nobody kind of thing.
No, that's true. And I don't think you see a lot of Grail Knights in taverns, so I guess they wouldn't join any parties.
Yeah, probably not.
So I'm curious about this, and I'm it's interesting because that is so specific. Mm. Like, you know, to play an Arthurian character in a world of, you know, where honor is the goal, you're maintaining honor. And that's, you know, kind of the story of the Green Knight is, you know, is honor and loyalty and honesty.
I wonder, I've never played it. I've heard talk about it, but I wonder if Pendragon, style Arthurian RPG, does anything with honor.
I wonder. You would think they would have to, because it would be such an obvious component, unless they're just going to leave it all up to the role playing, you know, the characters. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll put both a link for what I can find to the website and then also that trailer. So that movie, I'm very interested in the movie. And the interesting thing about the movie is also the casting. So Dev Patel, an Indian actor, is playing Gawain. Very expressive, soulful eyes and nice, you know, beard, and like, so very knight looking, but very opposite of how you would think they would cast, you know, in because when you look, so it's basically a lot of British actors, right. and Gawain is Arthur's nephew, so we'll have to see how they balance that. But yeah, I mean, it looks like he will do a really interesting job, because visually it's going to be it just has a really nice kind of surreal quality. And I think that story is oddly surreal, depending on who push it. It's magical and strange.
About the few King Arthur stories I've read, which aren't that many, I think you would kind of have to go that way, because they're supposed to be kind of like mythical.
Right, right. And
do you really want to see like an Arthurian movie where everyone's like dirty and gritty and things are kind of like very grounded in reality? Because is that what it's supposed to be? I don't necessarily think so.
Ask Guy Ritchie, because I think there was a lot of drinking and plotting and that was the worst. All I remember, the one I remember most, is Excalibur from the 80s. But that came out kind of, you know, during the fantasy boom. Interesting thing about movies, though, is the Exhibitors Guild, or the union of movie theaters, just agreed to allow simultaneous, you know, premium streaming or digital debut along with theatrical debut.
Okay.
So you're going to be seeing like maybe $20, $30 to watch a movie on your TV just the same day that it comes out in the theater.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they agreed to that because it doesn't seem like there's any way around it to keep things going.
Yeah. But with people staying home. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, so that'll be interesting. We can see a lot of digital.
If we have Peacock or the correct whatever service.
Oh, yeah, right, you know. Right. It's quite a list now, isn't it? I can't believe that these companies are that arrogant to think that they're going to outlast. I mean, I don't know. It's very strange. It's just going to be a game of attrition.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be these people just.
It's the Wild West in streaming, right? Anybody and everybody, as long as you can put one together. And, well, hate to say it, but why not? And why not try and make money now while you can do it before everything collapses and consolidates again?
Right, right. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, where I'm currently making or mocking up cards for Fate character components.
Oh.
Because after that last Masters of Umdar game we ran, to run, I realized that for one-shots or games with new players, the GM has to take on a larger responsibility, I think, of character creation, especially game information.
Right.
So it would be a lot easier if I could just pass stuff out rather than asking players to write it down. Because, like, for me learning a new game, if I don't know what a rule does, kind of, not I gloss over it, but if someone told me, hey, write this thing down and it does X, Y, Z, I'd be like, great, I don't know what that does, so I kind of don't really care about it. Yeah, right. Yeah. So it'd be a lot better if I could just like pass out cards to have people build stuff. And from a lot of the games, the one-shot games I've run at the Kansai Jig RPG Game Day, again, it would just be a lot faster to go bum, 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 and deal out cards rather than explain to multiple people or tell multiple people, write this thing down in your character sheet.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they did a really good job with that in the Mutant Year Zero, the robot version of it, where you're playing kind of abandoned androids. So you basically built with cards, like a head, a chest, and legs, and they all had different stats, and you could do different combinations of things. But based on your class, you could only kind of take so many points that you could fill. So, but that worked really well, and they even gave you kind of a visual representation of what that might look like.
Maybe that explains why when you rolled up a robot character, you're like, "What type of robot?" And I'm like, "It just says robot." Right. You're like, "Ah," and everyone just else got robot, to roll on a couple right? extra tables. Yeah,
but Lee filled me in on my origin story, so that was perfect.
So how about you?
Oh, so I do a weekly live stream of my single panel gag cartoon. So you can find that on both YouTube and Twitter at Abuse Cartoons. The website is abusecartoons.com. And the archive of the cartoon is gocomics.com/domesticabuse. If you want to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, the website is idleredhands.com. Follow us on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. And if you'd like to support the website, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/idleredhands. So because we're talking about fantasy this week, I thought I would read a quote from J.R.R. Tolkien that really kind of stood out to me. And it seems like he had to do some defending of the fairy stories he was writing. I guess coming from the academic world, you're going to have a lot of criticism that you're not doing scholarly, legitimately scholarly work when you're writing The Lord of the Rings, even though there was so much elven language and so much that he put into it. I think there's still some criticism. And I really liked some of his responses to them. So I'd like to read one of those now. Fantasy is escapist, and that is its glory. If a soldier is imprisoned by the enemy, don't we consider it his duty to escape? If we value the freedom of mind and soul, if we're partisans of liberty, then it's our plain duty to escape and to take as many people with us as we can. So I thought that really got across the value of fantasy. And I think in a Christian context, there's quotes of him making references to fantasy and fairy stories as well. And I think that's important to keep in mind, especially more recently when people are talking about what is coming to the gaming table, what people are bringing with them to the gaming table, to not obsess about the walls that hold you in, defining those and obsessing with those, as well as your jailer, the person that's holding you prisoner. So basically the difficulties, the hardships of your regular life, because this escape is what you're doing, and fantasy is that escape. So I just thought that resonated well with what I've heard people talking about recently. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.